Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to the Friday evening edition of The Money Show. It is 8 minutes past six. Evan Walker, Portfolio Manager 361 Asset Management, to talk to us about the retail sector. More and more South African retailers who either through their own design went off to go and find foreign earnings, or through pressure from their shareholders saying, what are you doing to grow? Or through pressure from their board saying, we better grow, otherwise our shareholders are going to shout at us for not growing, went overseas and spent billions of shareholders' money to go into markets to get nice hard currency earnings. And you know what? It doesn't always work out the way that you dream it will. And more South African companies are licking their wounds globally. So we'll talk about that in some detail this evening. Andrew Bryson, he's a portfolio manager at Sunlum Private Wealth. Tonight, his challenge is to explain to us what's going on in Donald Trump's brain, because on Wednesday, the US Fed, as expected, cut interest rates by 25 basis points, and that led to renewed confidence in the US economy, and there was a nice bounce in US markets, and then gold price plummeted, and so yesterday gold shares got sold off sharply, and then good U.S. jobs numbers, 164,000 new jobs in the U.S. Plus, you get Donald Trump now upping the ante against the Chinese and the trade wars, which we thought were dying down a little bit and everybody was playing nice. Clearly not, because now there's $300 billion worth of tariffs on Chinese imports into the United States. And that's caused all kinds of havoc on international markets today. We'll bring you some of the best bits of The Money Show. I really enjoyed the discussion, if you missed it, with Nicola Klein. She is the dean at Gibbs. We'll bring you an extract of that. Why Nicky Newton-King announced her retirement this week, plus a whole bunch of other stories too. And we'll wrap it up, as we always do on a Friday night, with the brutal biz quiz.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
It really is nothing short of staggering, the extent of write-offs in the South African retail sector as a result of bad international investment decisions by companies. Now, I don't, and you might not, face the multiplicity of really hard decisions that any managers of any company face on a daily basis. They've got to second guess what is going to be happening, not tomorrow, but 6 and 12 months, 18 months and 5 years from now, when they make investment decisions on behalf of their shareholders. It's a really difficult job to do. Let's not underestimate that. But then again, you and I don't get paid the big bucks that these guys get paid for their expertise, their instincts, their guts, whatever it is that they get paid for. We don't get the big bucks. We don't get the share options. We don't therefore have to make those calls. Evan Walker's got to second guess the guys who are second guessing the world. He is the portfolio manager at 361 Asset Management. And Evan Walker, there do seem to have been a disproportionate number of, I'm going to use the polite word, mistakes made in recent years, which are now coming home to roost in the resale sector.
Hi, good evening, Bruce. Most definitely. I mean, it's actually been a travesty what's happened for shareholder money. I mean, you've seen, you know, Woolworths continue right down the investment in David Jones. I mean, that investment cost them $21 billion, and they've written predominantly most of that off, and there's virtually no value left in that investment. I mean, that $21 billion, that could have been returned to domestic shareholders via dividends, etc. So we've seen a number of these now, including Truworths with their office acquisition. I mean, we've seen what's happened in the Braid Stable, and we can continue going on, not even in the retail sector, you know, in the hospital groups, etc., etc. I mean, there's very few, I mean, international expansion stories that have worked for South African companies, unfortunately. I mean, the only one really is the big mammoth in Naspers and one or two of, you know, the previous older generation stocks that have worked for us. But you know, in the last 10, 15 years, we've seen very little in the way of success stories from international expansion.
Why not?
Bruce, I'm a little bit of a cynic, as you well know, and I mean, to me, it's always, well, you know, the whole world is out there bidding for these assets, and then suddenly, you know, South African retailers, you know, from the bottom end of the earth come along and buy these businesses that no one else wants, you know. So, you know, if you take the David Jones acquisition, I mean, there's a number of sizable Australian retailers that could have bought it, and they didn't, and they evaluate the environment, and you always think, well, now, these are the experts that are there. Why aren't they buying these assets? And they haven't done so. And then South African companies come along and buy these things. And then, you know, you always look at them and think, well, what value can South African retailers add? They're very good in the domestic environment locally, but that's because they know them and they've been there 50, 60, 70 years in parts. But You know, we always question the acquisitions, and a lot of them have come home to roost. As you rightly said up front, most of the pressure have been to go and buy international earnings in a South African environment where growth has been very stagnant. But that's not often the best scenario for a shareholder. The best scenario for a shareholder is to often get that cash back rewarded in higher returns via dividends, et cetera, or in buybacks, and continue to grow. I mean, the best example in the South African retail sector is actually Clicks, who exited the Australian acquisition 15-odd years ago. They owned a business called Priceline. They exited a long time ago, and they focused on the domestic business, and that's our most highly rated retailer we have in South Africa today, and continues to generate strong returns investing in its current business and returning strong dividends to shareholders. So there's been no reason for our South African shareholders to go anywhere but South Africa, and continuing to invest in the local environment, just improving their existing businesses.
Now, you and I have got this wonderful advantage. It's called foresight, and it gives us perfect 2020 vision. So now we can look back and say, puh, idiots. Is that fair? I mean, considering that if you are the chief executive of a company and you've got a board that is leaning on you saying, so where are you going to grow next year? And you've got shareholders saying, where are you going to grow next year? And do you know that the local environment is shot? And do you know that you better get some offshore earnings? Because if you don't get hard currency earnings into this business, we're not going to support you as shareholders. And big asset management companies then lean on these guys. They start writing nasty reports about the lack of innovation and the lack of adventurousness. And just look at the globe and all the juicy pickings out there. And South Africa's not participating in the global growth. And we're all going to die. And I mean, again, that last bit is a bit of an exaggeration. But I don't think the rest of it is.
Bruce, it isn't. I think there's a lot of board ego that goes with CEO positions. Unfortunately, I think that's global. I think there is a lot of shareholder pressure to grow earnings, but I think often shareholders reflect the fact that growth and distributions via the way of dividends are also a return factor. And I think I don't think those are properly digested by shareholders in terms of valuation of companies going forward and the actual domestic investments here. So I think There's a bit of everything in this involvement. I think there certainly is a lot of scrutiny we need to put on these businesses in terms of, you know, board selections and why they've gone offshore in terms of these mammoth acquisitions where a lot of shareholder money has been spent on poor returning businesses in environments that are not improving. I mean, specifically the retail environment where, you know, even 10 years ago we knew the internet would be a threat. So, you know, it wasn't rocket science to go and buy, you know, a departmental store in, you know, where there's a declining departmental store business globally. You know, Woolworths going to support David Jones. This was always questionable. I mean, it was never not questionable. But, you know, the market took a lot of leaf out of the fact that you were going and borrowing money at virtually zero interest rates or very low rates around the world and then investing them hopefully in returns that were in excess of those low interest rates. And for a while, the market took solace in the fact that you could actually go and do this until these companies could no longer pay the interest bills, you know, and it comes on to reach. So there's a bit of everything in all of this, but, you know, I think in hindsight, shareholders have probably been a little bit weak in terms of pressurizing companies in terms of just why and what is the strategic direction? What value add can you put into these businesses that other companies offshore can't do, and why are you making these acquisitions?
Yeah, I mean, what's greatly ironic, I suppose, is that South Africa's best performing retailer, Clicks, as you've pointed out, was for much of those 15 years after the return from Australia, run by a foreigner. David Neil came from Boots in the United Kingdom and didn't fall into the trap that so many South African-born executives fall into, which is to offshore businesses and to get out as much as they possibly can. It was David Neil who went, actually, no, this is a good market and this is a place where if we focus and grow and differentiate and improve what we do, we can give great returns to shareholders. And that's what the guy from the UK did in South Africa, while lots of South Africans went into places like the UK and Australia, where both markets have burnt them and their shareholders very badly.
Exactly. And I mean, if you remember Pick and Pay, I mean, they did the same thing. They went to Australia and had to exit.
Twice.
And I mean, the amount of money that they wasted in terms of exiting Franklin's was horrendous. If they plowed that back into the South African business and hadn't deployed that capital offshore and wasted that money, I mean, the opportunity cost of that money sitting in Australia for over 15 years was billions, Bruce, in terms of the money that was wasted.
But there was a time when Pick n Pay was the dominant retailer in South Africa. It was the Woolies of its day. It then went into Australia, backwards and forwards, then back again and back here. And while it was deploying billions into Franklin's in Australia, ShopRite was building massive distribution centres, and Checkers and ShopRite then got a huge leg up while Woolies sort of took control of the top end of the market. ShopRite and Checkers wrought havoc for Pick n Pay, which was distracted elsewhere. And I mean, Raymond Ackerman's phoned in here to the show before to calm down Ian Power, who's a friend of yours and who used to be a regular on the show, and tell us that, you know, we needed to be more understanding of the decisions they took at the time when there was expansion. Do directors of these large retailers deserve some empathy for having to guess what's going to be happening 18 months, 5 years from now? Or do we need to hold them to a higher standard?
No, Bruce, strategically, I think we have to hold them to a higher standard. And the mere fact that a lot of these business models can't make returns, I remember having a discussion as a large shareholder at RMB in the Pick n Pay and having seen them, 6-7 years before they exited and basically proved to them they could never make a return on shareholders' money in Australia. So, and they took 7 years to exit post that. So, a lot of these decisions are slow. They're very, very, very crippling in terms of returns. And what CEOs tend to forget is the opportunity cost of this money that is just rolling up every year and costing shareholders enormous amounts of returns. And that's what's often foregone, in these decisions, is the fact that this money is just parked there for 5, 10, 15 years with no returns, when this money could be returning something else somewhere, sitting in a bank account in South Africa getting the 8%. So, sometimes it's not rocket science. If something's not working, exit it, and why are we there in the first place if we can't actually fix these businesses? So a lot of times, yes, you've got to give them the solace that they've actually gone into markets. Another stock that's gone in and out a couple of times and they've tried has been Mr. Price, but mostly they focus on the South African market and they've been very successful over a number of years. So, there have been guys that have forayed in and they've come out, but the acquisitions have been small and they haven't risked the whole balance sheet on a single acquisition. In the case of Woolworths and even the case of Pick n Pay years ago, the amount of money that was risked on the South African balance sheet is just enormous. Unjustifiably so.
Who's had success? When we look at the big guys, SAB Miller clearly was massively globally successful. Bidvest with now what is now Bidcorp, massively successful. Discovery's got potential upside with Vitality into the future. We've seen the Naspers deal, which Chris Becker admits was lucky with Tencent. They picked a good one after lots of bad ones, kissed lots of frogs, and finally one turned into a handsome prince. But other than that, so many other companies have become seriously unstuck globally. Steinhoff being a case in point. That was fraud in addition to bad, overpaying for assets. Some very clever people have made some terribly bad decisions.
Exceptionally bad decisions. If you take our hospital groups, Netcare, Mediclinic, Alliance Healthcare, they've had all exit foreign operations because they've been an absolute disaster. Mediclinic hasn't exited them yet, but their returns have been abysmal. Netcare wasted, over 15 years in external markets and they had to eventually just liquidate those businesses. The amount of shareholder money that was wasted over that period of time is atrocious. If you take, we can go through sector by sector. We can start at the top and go all the way through them. There's a casualty in every one and sometimes more than one in all these sectors. We've got a couple, as you've well mentioned. Another one was obviously, Richemont through the early years and BAT that we've obviously, on our market that's, hasn't done well of recent, but over the years it's still been a good performer for and a big stock on the investment side for us. But net, if you look through all the individual companies that we deal with on a daily basis, there's been very, very few that I can say that have stacked up in terms of giving shareholder returns. And most of these companies, unfortunately, have exited these positions after a couple of years and they just haven't made returns.
I was doing some sums the other day and I was counting up and I lost count at 12 billion. It's probably about 10 or 12 billion that Woolies has blown in Australia in 5 years. 12 billion rand.
Yeah, they paid 21 billion for David Jones and they've written it down now by 1.2 billion odd Australia. Yeah, so it's cost them 12 billion they've written off effectively. So they're still valuing that asset at, call it 9 billion rand, but it's not going to make a return justifiable to the 9 billion in the next couple of years. It'll probably break even. So, you know, even that $9 billion is questionable whether it's going to make a return on that $9 billion. And that's obviously the question. But what comes with this now is a balance sheet that's lumped full of debt and a market where you probably couldn't sell this business in for a quarter of what you paid for it. You tend to exit these businesses with balance sheets which were in superb shape a number of years ago. I mean, these businesses were paying very healthy dividends, and the Woolworths dividends already had to be cut once. And that's obviously in the environment, which is tough. We understand that SA environment is tough, and in fairness to Woolworths, they have improved the domestic offering in the last 12 months. We've seen a slight improve on their side there. But you know, again, I mean, this is an environment where you could have invested a whole lot more in the South African business and got the returns from that.
Evan Walker, as always, thank you. Portfolio Manager 361 Asset Management. I mean, these guys, and then you get these executives, you get paid millions and millions and millions of rand every year for their expertise. And their expertise, they're a squillion times cleverer than I and possibly you. And we sit here and we judge them. But your pension depends on their ability to make decent decisions. So you rely on them and you pay them to make decent decisions. And they haven't made decent decisions. Where's the next trend? Everybody comes back home again when they should have been going overseas. I don't know. It's like, you know, these guys move like cattle. And eventually cattle end up getting slaughtered, I guess.
The Money Show. The Markets.
Our market commentator, Andrew Bryson from Sanlam Private Wealth. His eyes were getting bigger and bigger and bigger as we went deeper and deeper into the quagmire of South African business failures globally. What is it in the water in places like Sandton and Kenilworth and other places where CEOs sit that they feel the need to do these massive global expansions? Even if, when we look back in retrospect, it was a terrible idea to do it.
Thanks, Bruce. Look, I think there's a lot of pressure for senior management in those positions to continue to expand, to continue to grow the top line, and sometimes being in an emerging market, one feels that there might be better opportunities elsewhere or better growth opportunities. But I think, as Evan was saying, what we've seen is some of these investments have been very sizable relative to the balance sheet. I think companies that have done it in a more measured approach have had far better success than some of the businesses that you were talking about.
And it's so tantalizing because you look at the performance of the S&P 500 versus the performance of the JSE over the last 5 years, and it's chalk and the very best possible cheese you could ever imagine. I mean, the S&P 500 has performed spectacularly, and South Africa's been a dog show in terms of market performance. So it's no wonder that people second guess and decide to offshore their opportunities. But when they do it, they don't seem to do it right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can get swept up in the noise, and we're certainly in a volatile political environment at the moment. But I think, you know, capital allocation is fundamental. I guess one of the big stories at the moment is Sasol's investment in the States. I mean, that's been hugely impaired. It makes you concerned as a South African investor.
And the guy who took Sasol to Lake Charles in the United States was a guy called David Constable, who got paid, 50 million rand a year or something crazy at the peak. Big, big money to make big, big decisions. He's gone. He's got his money. Sasol shareholders' pension funds are sitting today with these shares that are worth considerably less than they might have been had they not gone on these follies.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I think maybe the bigger questions there around remuneration and what sort of period, you know, you remunerate these individuals making these very long-term decisions.
I mean, we've had a tough week on the JSE. Shares have sold off quite sharply, but it's been a global phenomenon. It's got nothing to do with the fact that Mark Barnes left the post office or anything along those lines. It's more to do with the fact that Wednesday was a good day for markets because U.S. interest rates were cut, and then we saw good jobs numbers coming out of the U.S., 164,000 jobs, and then suddenly Donald Trump woke up grumpy and said, well, $300 billion worth of tariffs on Chinese goods, and suddenly we're back in trade war mode again.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I haven't been monitoring my Twitter account enough because I think, you know, it's clearly where all the communication comes from the States at the moment. Big moves. Or big announcement from the U.S. president there that they were going to implement tariffs on the remaining goods coming out of China into the U.S. So I think it's on about $300 billion worth of goods. And that's significant. And I mean, we all thought that the trade talks were moving in the right direction,
yeah,
that we were going to see some sort of positive conclusion. And that doesn't seem to be the case.
No, it doesn't. And added to that, I mean, to make our lives more awkward in South Africa, last week we had Fitch give us a downgrade in terms of its view of South Africa. Already they've got us in sub-investment grade. Moody's has been making noises this week that, you know, lots of the decisions that government are taking are not necessarily good for our investment grade, and we feel like we're slipping and sliding almost to the inevitability of a downgrade. And that's caused quite a lot of pain for our currency once again, which was just beginning to come back to life and now back toward the ICU ward.
Yeah, look, I think we need to just look at the context of why the rand was strengthening below that 14 level. That had a lot to do with international rates and sort of the carry trade and the hunt for yield, and less to do with South Africa as a destination. And with the fiscal issues that we're facing, you know, with the bailout of Eskom, you know, the I guess the deepening employment crisis in the country. Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes you investors wake up to the realities that the South African economy and the South African fiscus is facing at the moment.
So then can you blame chief executives for taking money out of the country? I mean, let's say we go in this vicious circle, and that's why these guys are damned if they do and damned if they don't, I suppose.
Yeah, look, I think it's all about making the right investment. I was actually going to bring up a business that's been doing the capital allocation for a long time. It's a business called the Mondi packaging business, or paper business. And although the price was weak today, that management team has a fantastic track record of making good capital allocation
now,
decisions.
Now, Mondi was part of Anglo-American, and Anglo-American spun off a whole bunch of businesses over time, and probably 10 or 12 years ago, Mondi then got unbundled and was set free to run its own businesses. And it's one of those globalized businesses in the packaging businesses worldwide. So there is a success story. Okay, so I'll add Mondi to the short list, and it is a short list of firms that have done well. But it is a tragically short list.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I come back to the quantity, the size of these acquisitions. I think, you know, when you go into the developed market and you're a South African institution, you know, you're probably coming late to the queue to a particular asset that's come to market. And unless there's some very, very good reason why you can add value, I think you have to be careful about how much capital you risk. Example of late was Famous Brands and their acquisition in the UK. Also, you know, they've had a very challenging time there. So, you know, I think always be skeptical from an investment point of view, or as an investor into these businesses, that if they are doing acquisitions, you know, do you think that they have you know, some unique capability of extracting value.
In the Solutionist Thinking podcast series, season one, we spoke to the founders of the First Rand Group, and I forget which one of the founders it was, but I think it was Laurie Dippenaar who said, you know, anybody ever came to us and said that, you know, they thought we should expand into another country, we asked who in the executive team wants to go and live there. And often it's motivated by selfish reasons, and management teams and boards and shareholders fall for it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I can't comment.
It's a broad comment. It's my comment, not Andrew Bryson's comment. Andrew is with Sanlam Private Wealth. He's tonight's market commentator. 1.25% down on the JSE, nearly 2% lower, but markets around the world feeling the pain of Donald Trump's icy breath blowing across global markets, with a huge increase in tariffs on Chinese imports into the United States.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live, online, smartphones, DSTV, and 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to The Money Show. We've got Bootle standing by. He's going to give us some sport in a moment. But first, coming up on your next Money Show, stand-up comedian, stand-up guy, film director Kwagiso Lediga joins us in studio on Make Money Monday's special edition guest, talking all about personal finances. We'll also catch up with Ben Mesrich, the author of Bitcoin Billionaires, The True Story of Genius, Betrayal and Redemption. Take two. We tried him last time, but we got confused with time zones. But we've got his alarm set. And so Ben Mesrich next time on The Money Show.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Welcome to The Money Show. Let's bring you some of the best bits from the week that has been here on The Money Show. We'll also play the Brutal Biz Quiz before we pack our bags for the weekend. Earlier this week, we caught up with Eskom's 10th the chief executive in 10 years. It's only a temporary arrangement, he promises. Jabu Mabuza. He's also chairman of the power utility, which raises all kinds of interesting questions when it comes to who really makes the calls. The chairman, the board, is supposed to be the oversight of the executive. But in the desperate circumstances in which Eskom finds itself, a record loss of 20.7 billion rand and mounting 420 billion rand debt burden, the severity of the threat that it poses to the country's economy means that desperate times call for desperate measures. And I asked Jabu Mabuza why it's taken so long to find anybody, just anybody, who actually wants the job of CEO.
Unfortunately, Bruce, as you would be aware, there are processes. Eskom, if it was my own company, I would have a CEO tomorrow. There are certain processes you need to follow. There's a certain advertising protocol you need to follow. We have done that. We should be able to close the adverts on the second. We believe and we committed to, by the 30th of September, to be giving the shareholder a list of three names. I have not been told whom not to employ, neither have I been told whom to employ. So the adverts are out there. The adverts, I think they're quite clear. We're calling on any and everybody to put in their CV, and we will not extend. I certainly am not available to extend the 3 months to the 31st of October.
Because there are some concerns. I mean, yes, in the short term, Eskom in crisis, you do whatever is required. If it does go pretty much beyond that 3 month period, then from a governance perspective, regardless of your own credentials, people get a bit nervous when somebody's executive chairman and acting chief executive, especially in an organization with a fraughter history as Eskom has got.
Very valid, Bruce, but Minister did address this point today. In terms of the law, the Minister took legal advice. In terms of Eskom's Convention Act, in terms of the Companies Act, in terms of Eskom's MOI, it is not disallowable to do what the minister has done. There is also precedent in the private sector and indeed in Eskom when a previous chief executive and a chairman walked away, the deputy chairman became an acting executive chairman and chief executive. That said, it does not make the issue of oversight and balance of power to disappear. In recognition of that, the minister had determined today that Professor Malikapuru Makhoba, who is the chair of the Eskom Social Sustainability and Ethics Committee, as an independent director in the interim for the 3 months.
Jabu Mabuza running Eskom. And yes, we watch the space. Anybody want the job? Send it to jabu@eskom.co.za. I don't know that's the email address. The JSE outgoing chief executive, Nikki Newton-King, 52 years old and in retirement at the end of September. She popped into studio on results day for the JSE to tell us why she is taking a break after 23 years at the exchange, 16 of those as deputy and then as chief executive.
No, you know, it's all about spending 23 years in one institution. I started really as a lawyer. I've spent 8 years as CEO, 8 years before that as deputy CEO, many years in different executive roles. And I think good governance and my sense of the right time would indicate that there's a time that you have to step back. And I think that time is really now. And I've decided to do that, notwithstanding the fact that I am so excited about what we do. I am so privileged to work with such an extraordinary team. And it's such an extraordinary opportunity to be contributing to the country at this time in its history. But there is a time when you need to step back.
Have you ever worked, had a proper job anywhere else other than JSE Limited?
I've been a partner at Weber Wenzel, the law firm, and before that, and in various times in my career, been a student at various universities overseas. So not worked anywhere else, but certainly worked as a lawyer.
Taking next year off is Nikki Newton-King, and she'll be back with a bang in 2021. No firm plans as to what she's going to do, but she's still got a huge contribution to make to South Africa. Amid the huge uncertainty at Old Mutual, Peter Moyo's future as chief executive still very much hanging in the balance, despite the fact that there was a court order allowing him to go back to work. Old Mutual then appealed that. Investors are saying, look, guys, let's fix this and get the end of this impasse sooner rather than later. We spoke to Tabi Tsengiwe. She's Old Mutual's head of communications after the Joe Joburg High Court ruled that Old Mutual acted unlawfully when terminating Peter Moyo's employment and also blocking the business from continuing a process of finding a replacement. I asked Tabby if they were rolling out the red carpet for Peter.
The board has actually decided to appeal the judgment. So that is the bit of information that is breaking news for you right now. The judgment will be appealed by the board because the board of the directors of the company are really resolute that at all times they have acted in keeping with their fiduciary responsibilities to the company, definitely to the shareholders, policyholders, staff, and all our stakeholders. And you're right, Bruce. It is very clear that there has been a complete and irreparable breakdown in trust. And probably some relationships have been compromised between the board and Mr. Moyo, which is a pity, because we have always maintained as Old Mutual that it was not our desire for this to play out in the courts. Decision to go to the courts was that of Mr. Moyo's and not that of Old Mutual.
And then Peter Moyo turned up at the office the next day with a cup of coffee and said, no, security guard, really, I do work here. It's messy. It's incredibly messy and very, very sad. Reputations are being tarnished as a result. But what amazing Make Money Mondays. It's like having a favorite child, having a favorite feature. Our features don't have emotions, though. But it's lots of you love Make Money Mondays because we get famous people in and we interview them, we talk to them about money, and sometimes they tell stories that surprise you so much because you think, surely that person didn't make that mistake. And they did. And they're quite honest about it. And they're very kind to share their great stories. And one of those sharers in this past week has been Professor Nicola Klein. Now, she is the Dean at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. And she was this week's Make Money Monday special edition guest. And she told us about the time she bought her first car.
I was very lucky. So I had a grandfather who passed away who put some money into the Guardians Fund. And there it sat, I think, doing nothing. I don't even know if there is still a thing called the Guardians Fund, but it sat, he died intestate. It sat doing nothing. And when I was, 18 or 21 or whatever it is when you come into that age, I was older than 18, definitely, 21. My father said to me, there is enough money for you to buy a very small secondhand car. And the deal is that you can have this money, which was mine anyway, but I probably shouldn't have listened to him. But he said to me, you can have this money, but the deal is you never, promise me, you are never going to buy a car on credit. And that was the really lucky thing that I had, was that I started being able to buy my first car cash and immediately started saving for the next one. So, you know, I think if you can save and buy things without having to buy on credit, and I'm not talking about houses, I think.
Yeah. You buy a house for cash. A house for cash, then you've probably done something illegal.
Never bought a house for cash. Was lucky, didn't have to live in a caravan. But you know, when you look at the time value of money, I think our human brain can't understand the impact of compounding. So it's only when you actually start pulling out that calculator or putting things on graphs that you start realizing how much a very wise message like that has helped me across the years.
Nicola Klein, the Dean at Gibbs, our Make Money Monday special edition guest. Those are just some of the best bits of The Money Show from this week. We'll generate a whole bunch more next week. And then we'll play them to you next Friday, because that's the way we roll here on The Money Show. Another way we roll is we like to play the Brutal Biz Quiz on a Friday night. And in order to do that, we need you to play ball. You need to phone us on 021-446-0567, 011-883, Charlene 0702. It's an in-joke, sorry. First question tonight, what do Brian Molefe, Johnny Dlada, Brian Damas, and Jabu Mabuza all have in common? They've all done something in common. Brian Molefe, Johnny Dlada, Brian Damas, and Jabu Mabuza all have one thing in common. What is that one thing that they do have in common, please? On 011-883-0702-021-446-0567.
The Money Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
And it is brutal. I wouldn't have got answer number two. I wouldn't have got answer number two. I wouldn't have. If it wasn't written down in front of me, I wouldn't have got it. So good luck to you if you're playing this evening's Brutal Biz Quiz. So 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. What do Brian Molefe, Johnny Dlatla, Brian Damas, and Jabu Mabuza all have in common? Mukondi in Roodepoort.
They were all once Eskom CEOs.
They've all sat in the Eskom CEO's chair, Jabu Mabuza warming that seat this week himself. Yeah, announced that Jabu Mabuza will be the acting chief executive for 3 months to maintain stability at the organization until a permanent CEO is made. A CEO appointment is made. Brian was there a couple of times. Johnny Dadla was there. Forgotten about him. Brian Damas, he tried hard to turn it around, and eventually he left. And now Jabu Mabuza's got the most thankless job in South Africa. Okay, here's the one that, Mukondi, I wouldn't have got. Let's see how good you are at this game. What do Lindiwe Kwele, René van Wyk, and Zoux Ramasia all have in common?
Can I have the names again?
Lindiwe Kwele, René van Wyk, and Zoux Ramasia.
Wow. I think they were part of Old Mutual.
Nice guess, Mukondi, but no. KB in Mondior, I think.
Are they not comedians?
Are they? I've not seen any of them on stage, KB, so I can't vouch for their comedic skills. Josiah in Kempton Park.
They're all acting CEOs of, yeah.
I can't, no ways. I didn't expect anybody to get it. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. All interim or acting CEOs. Okay, where Lindiwe Kwele is where?
South African Post Office.
Yep, Mark Barnes walked out yesterday, and Lindiwe Kwele has taken over there. René van Wyk?
I think it's APSA.
And Zoux Ramasia?
Oh, you got me there.
No, but 2 out of 3 is not bad. Come on. I mean, that's SAA. Zoux isn't that well known. But yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah.
SAA. Yes, yes. That's a very... Geez, Josiah, that's brilliant. Which business school is named after a South African businessman turned philanthropist?
It's Gordon Business Institute or Gordon Institute of Business or something like, yeah.
Which is like, what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living? What's your job? Do you spend your life listening to the radio? Do you spend your life reading encyclopedias? What do you do?
Encyclopedia would be the one.
Pardon?
Encyclopedia would be the one.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
Gibbs, the Gordon Institute of Business Science, the school's named after Sir Donald Gordon. He was knighted in recognition for his contribution to the arts in the United Kingdom, but he also made a massive contribution to South Africa. And this week's Make Money Monday guest was the Dean at Gibbs, Nicola Klein. Which financial services group was founded in 1957 by the then Donny Gordon before he became Sir Donald?
Liberty.
What's his daughter's name?
His daughter.
Let's see how good you are at this game.
No, I have no idea who his daughter's name.
No, that wasn't a real question. That's Wendy Applebaum, and she's got she farms wine and does other things too. Yesterday, David Munro from Liberty, chief executive there, was on the show to talk about results and, of course, the fight that they're having with Discovery. Discovery says that David Munro is taking liberties with the Vitality Rewards program. What does Africapacity want to own? Africapacity wants to own what?
Africapacity, or can you rephrase that question? Africapacity like APSA?
No, Africapacity. No, not Africanacity. Africapacity is a company, and it wants to buy a financial services, a broken financial services institution, a robbed.
Oh, VBS Mutual Bank, sorry.
I am joining the applause, Josiah in Kempton Park. What an amazing... Sorry, everybody else who wanted to play. Sometimes we just get kids who didn't have siblings. They're not used to sharing and they're not used to playing along. But Josiah in Kempton Park, what an amazing biz quiz this evening. Really, really difficult questions. And Josiah just went, eat, boom, 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 and took it over. Did very well. Well done, Josiah, Kempton Park. You are the whiz of the brutal biz quiz on this wonderful Friday night. You've really lifted my mood. I'm amazed by your capacity and what you know. That's brilliant. Well done to you. Great whiz of the biz quiz this Friday night. That's it from The Money Show. Good night.